All right, Korach Tavshin Samach Tes. Korach Tavshin Samach Tes. I assume you all know the story. If not, quickly read it. And we're going to ask some basic questions, okay? The first question we're going to ask, which is not a detail-oriented question, but a general question, arises from Psukim Chaf Tes and Lamed, 29 and 30. Moshe here requests that a brand new death form of elimination of Korach and everybody associated with him and all his possessions and all his relatives, including babies who are not guilty of anything, not ben adam l'chaver, not ben adam l'machom, everything be eliminated in a way that has never been seen before. He says in Pasuk 29, if they die like every person dies, then God didn't send me. But if HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates something brand new, v'imbriya yivra Hashem, if Hashem creates a whole new form of creation, upatzta ha'adama espiha, and the earth should open its mouth and swallow them, and they will go down alive to Sheol, then you will know that these people really, you know, angered HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that will be my vindication. Now, let's just analyze this. Number one, superficially you say, why did Moshe ask for a brand new creation, which is that the earth should open its mouth and swallow the people, and they should go down alive? Number one, isn't there any onesh in the whole wide world, you know, bad enough for these people? Something new had to be created? But then you ask another question, you say, wait a second, is the earth opening its mouth and swallowing people something brand new? It does open its mouth and swallow people, we call that an earthquake. Okay, at the right time and at the right moment, yes, like the splitting of the sea, but we also know there are similar phenomenon like tidal waves, right? Moshe is calling this something brand new that has never happened before that will vindicate him. So why will an earthquake vindicate Moshe? So my grandfather points out here that not only is it not true that there's no such thing as an earthquake, okay, but furthermore, in addition to this, we know that this mouth, Pi Ha'aretz, the Pirkei Avos says in Perikei, Shepi Ha'aretz Nivra Be'erev Shabbos Bein Hashmashos. It's one of those miraculous phenomenon, the Pi Ha'aretz, the mouth of the earth that would open up under Korach and everybody, and everything would come sliding into it. This was already prepared and waiting from Erev Shabbos before creation. I mean, at the time of creation. So it's not brand new. So my grandfather points out that's not the emphasis of the Pasuk. Now here our question deepens. What's brand new is the end of the Pasuk, V'yardu chayim sheola, that they will go down alive to Gehenna. Now that's brand new. We have never heard of anybody going down alive and remaining alive in Gehenna. However, we have heard of people going alive to the next world, such as Eliyahu and they say she was very old. But by Yaakov Avinu, it says Yaakov Avinu lo meis, and there's a whole discussion about that. But something very curious that Chazal point out right away, that Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kahas ben Levi, stop, Yaakov's name is not mentioned here. So the grandfather Yaakov did not want to be associated with Korach. Yaakov lo meis. And what we're seeing here is that Korach and his Ada actually also didn't die. Now, this fact that Korach didn't die will be the proof that these people have really angered HaKadosh Baruch Hu and prove that Hashem did send Moshe. How will the fact that they went down to Gehenna alive prove that Hashem did send Moshe? So you know the Chazal. So the Chazal is that place in the Midbar that they sunk into till this day, if you go there, and I guess you have to have a form of Ruach HaKodesh, you can hear them screaming, Moshe emes v'toraso emes. Now, there's a remez to that that the Kli Yoker picks up on the Pasuk. Now, Pinchas Friedman points this out. I once told you about Pinchas Friedman, right? So he points this out here, that on look in Psukim, look in the Pasuk. Hold on here we are. Look in Perek Tezayin. Okay. And look in Pasuk. Starting with Pasuk 32, Vatiftach Haaretz es piha, the land, the earth opened its mouth, swallowed them up, and everything went down, and then Vatichas Aleim Haaretz, the whole earth closed up over them. Now look at Pasuk Lamed Aleph, V'kol Yisrael, Asher Sevivo Sehem, all the Jews that were around that saw everything sliding into this pit, everything, all their possessions, their tents, everything came sliding into the place where the ground opened up. What did they do? What was their reaction? What do those words mean? Nasu likolam. They ran towards their voices. What does that word mean? They should have said they ran away. Nasu likolam. They ran towards their voices. Kiamru, because they said, pen tivla'enu aretz. Maybe the land will also swallow us up. So they ran to hear their voices, the Kli Yakar says. The Kli Yakar brings this down, and he brings from the Targum Unkelis that what they really mean here is what the Gemara in Sanhedrin Kuf Yud is talking about. Shekorach v'Adaso Omrim Tamid, Korach and his Eda are constantly saying from their position in Gehenna, where they're still alive, which is the Bria Chadasha, that's the brand new thing. They're still saying, Moshe Emes v'Torasso Emes, Moshe and his Torah are true, and we are liars. And this word, and the Gemara says, "Va'osokol," and this voice that emanated hitchil, it began to emanate miyad achar habliya, immediately after they were swallowed. "La'osokol hayotzi mimakom habliya nasu kol yisrael l'shmoa mayidabru." So that's where they all ran to hear what they were saying. They heard something and they ran to hear it. What was the essence of their chait? No one quite understood the chait. It was very complicated and hidden under many layers. This would vindicate Moshe because it would reveal that the real chait was that Moshe and the Torah he was giving over is MS. And they all went to hear it, and then they were afraid that maybe they also were tainted by that same mistake that Korach made, that same problem, and they wanted to make sure they were clean. So that's why they said, let's hear what they have to say, lest the earth also swallow us up, also maybe we're guilty too. Let's cleanse ourselves of this whatever type of corruption in our heads there is, that Korach got destroyed, let's say, from living on this earth, but not destroyed from vindicating Moshe for the rest of his life. So now let's understand the onesh of Korach. He is not allowed to inhabit any space on this earth. This aretz here is not for Korach and his Eda. That's how bad this sin is, worse than any other sin. Every other sinner can be buried in the earth, like a normal person. They still go back to the earth. They can sin. There's all kinds of forms of tshuva, all kinds of forms of kapara later on. But this earth, with the earth swallowing them up, opening up and closing, there's no room on this earth for them. They're not even, in a sense, allowed to die regular and be buried here. They go down to Gehenna, which is really a metaphysical place, and they're alive in Gehenna, vindicating Moshe forever. So knowing that, we have to think about, try to really analyze what their problem was, because everybody in that generation was afraid that they were also caught up in it. And obviously everything that the Torah writes is not for the moment, not just to tell you a really interesting story about what happened in the desert, but to teach us about little things that go on in our heads also. So that's number one. Let's talk about the complexity of the sin. In order to understand the complexity of the sin, we must recognize that there are three different things going on at the same time. There's Korach and his problems, the 250 people with their issues, and Dasan Aviron with their issues. They are all not one. They all have very different motivations. So you know, Korach we'll talk about, Rashi says, Vayikach Korach, it's a dangling participle, doesn't tell you what he took. Rashi tells you he took himself, his essence, his atzmius. We'll talk about that. Korach, we'll discuss Korach and his sin, what motivated him. He went and he gathered together 250 Nesiei Ha'eda, the heads of the tribes. Guess who these people were? These people were all firstborns who lost their positions to Shevet Levi. Okay, but Korach was from Shevet Levi. He was from Kahath. He ran when Moshe said, Mi Lashem Eli. He was from those that carried the Aron. He was from Shevet Levi. So they had two different issues, obviously. They lost their position to Shevet Levi. He was from Shevet Levi. We'll talk about both of them. And Dustin Vaviren had nothing to do with any of them. They just hated Moshe and Aaron way back from Mitzrayim. Okay, and we'll talk about them because they're all linked, obviously, and something links them. So they got together and they made a machlokas. Now, let's talk about machlokas for a minute. Machlokas, Chazal tell us, the Zohar brings down, and this, here the Nesiva Shalom talks a lot about this. He brings down from the Zohar, brings down from Chazal, that the essence of machlokas is it's the opposite of, it's a division, it's a rift in Shalom. Okay, now that doesn't sound like so insightful, that's what we know. Machlokas is a rift in Shalom, but maybe if we understood Shalom, we would understand machlokas more, so we have to think about Shalom and realize that all these three groups that participated in the machlokas here all had a problem with the Shalom, and they got together, okay? Now, Dustin and Vaviren, maybe they didn't have Shalom with Moshe. Maybe the 250 didn't have Shalom with Moshe because he took away their position. Maybe Korach didn't have Shalom with Moshe because he wanted more. But what's the essence of Shalom? So Shalom, we know, is from the Shoresh Shalem. Complete. Okay, so let's try to understand that link. Shalom, peace and completion. So, okay, simply you might say if a person has peace of mind, they feel shalom, you know, they feel complete. Does anybody really feel complete in this whole world? Not anyone who's thinking. Is anyone totally satisfied and complete? How could we be complete? Gemara says a person doesn't die with chatzi tavaso biyado, half the things they desired accomplished. A person feels complete with zero knowledge compared to real knowledge. The more we learn, the more we know how much we don't know. A person feels complete when a zillion people have so much more than them in a thousand different ways, not just physical. What does this shalem mean? Really, what is shalem? No one can feel complete. It's not possible. If one person had absolutely everything in the whole wide world, what would be the need of everybody else on earth? If that was the goal, to have everything, to be shalem, in spiritual, physical, emotional, so then everybody on earth is wasting their time. No one will have shlemus. So in order to understand the idea of completion, here we bring down this idea here. Bring on the Medrash. This is from the Siva Shalom. The Medrash in Parshas Veschanan, Perek Beis. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Yisrael. This is what Hashem said to Klal Yisrael. Kodesh Baruch Hu said, "Bani, to my children, Kol Ma Shebarasi Barasi Zugos. Everything I created in this world, I created in pairs, two halves of a whole of a shalim. I created Shemayim Va'aret Zugot. Heaven and earth are a zug." Chama ulavana, the sun and the moon are a zug. Adam and Chava, man and woman, are a zug. Olam hazen, olam haba is a zug. Aval kavodi, but my kavod, echad umiyuchad ba'olam, but my kavod is only one. Shalem is when both parts of the zug are united. That's called shalem. Okay, that's called shalom. In fact, when a man and a woman are together, the Chazal refer to this also as shalom, when the heavens and the earth are united, we say, Ose shalom bimrom of hu yase shalom aleinu, the heavens and the earth are united, there's shalom. Okay? When the sun and the moon, what's their relationship? That's shalom. You begin to see if you analyze heaven and earth, sun and moon, man and woman, and something interesting, olam haba and olam hazeh, that the definition of shalom has to be this. When the mashpia, the giver, and the mekabel, the receiver, are one. That's shalom. That's complete. So Kadosh Baruch Hu set up this world where they're not one. We spoke about this again. This has implications, going back to our big thesis, you know, with Ish and Isha. Moach and Lev, mind and heart, Ruchnias and Gashmias, so you can make your own connections. that clearly HaKadosh Baruch Hu set this world up where the two halves of a whole are not automatically one. But the relationship that makes them one is that one gives and one receives. So the sun gives light and the moon receives. The heavens give rain and the earth receives. Right? Man and woman. And now we see Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. The next world is Mashpia, is giving, influencing this world, like Korach in Gehenim, is still Mashpia on this world. Right? Sholem is the combination of the giver and the receiver as one, and that makes Sholem. So if you say that Korach is Machlokas, and it's the rift in Shalom, you have to see that he wanted to create a rift, or was himself a victim of a huge rift between the giver and the taker. What does that mean? He didn't want to be what? The taker? He hated the giver? What happened here? He said to Moshe, where do you see this idea? He said to Moshe the following. He said, Rav lechem, it's enough. You have enough. Ki kol ha'eda kulam kadoshim. Everyone is kadosh. And Hashem is in the midst of them. So why do you elevate yourself? So what's, in terms of the mashpia, the giver and the taker, the nosein and the makabel being one, where's Korach's issue, you know, implied in these in this pasuk? Why do you make yourself the giver? Right? Why are you above us? God is among all of us, giving to us directly. We all stood at Har Sinai. These are all the people that survived the Chet HaEgel. Right? Hashem is among us. So why are you the giver and we the taker? So what does that sound like Korach wants? We all want to be taking directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So my grandfather brings down here, without you really, he's telling me as an intermediary. So my grandfather brings down the following. Perek tes zayin pasuk dalin, v'yishma Moshe v'yipal al panav, Sanhedrin kufyud, the same place where it talks about their voices ringing out. Sanhedrin kufyud, shechashduhu me'eshes ish. He fell flat on his face, he couldn't even respond to them because they were really suspecting him of eshes ish. Now, what did Chazal mean by that? Could they really suspect Moshe of Eishes Ish? Didn't Miriam just spend 7 days with Taras because she questioned why he was separated from Tzipporah? So now they're actually wondering if he's involved in Eishes Ish, adultery with married women? I mean, Chazal obviously, as usual, do not tell you what they're trying to say. They are hinting to what they're trying to say, and we have to figure it out. So he says here, my grandfather, Kavanah Pshuta B'Dvarim, the simple Kavanah is that the women of that generation were Tzidkanios, and every time they spoke to their husbands regarding Moshe Rabbeinu or any of what Moshe had taught them or commanded them, they would always see it in a good light and always defend Moshe, like they did by the Egel. They didn't refuse to do the Egel, always defending Moshe. So the husbands got suspicious. But it's not possible. So my grandfather brings down that there's a Gemara in Pesachim that is the kind of the key to the riddle here, to the secret here. We say it all the time. Torah tziva lanu Moshe, morasha kehilas Yaakov. It's a morasha. It's an inheritance to the whole congregation of Yaakov. So Hashem taught Torah to Moshe. We learn on Pirkei Avos. Moshe gave it over to Klal Yisrael. And that's a Yerusha. So Chazal say, don't call it morasha, ella mu'urasa. It's like a man and woman, when they are in a state of erisin, and erisin is that state which we only have for a couple of minutes, you know, before the chuppah, but in the olden days, erisin was the stage of what we call betrothal, where they were committed to each other completely. If she would be disloyal to him, that would be like a form of Eishes Ish already. But they weren't married. Okay, so that's the state of Erisin. It's not Nisuin. It's right before the Nisuin. It's right before the Chuppah. The olden days, they actually did it quite a while before. And yet, at that stage, they are not allowed to be together physically. They're not married, but they're totally committed to each other, and it's an in-between stage. So what Chazal are trying to say is that Korach was saying, and they were complaining about Moshe, the following. Torah tziva lanu Moshe. You've given us Torah, Moshe. You are the Mashpia. But Morasha, Mu'urasa, like as in a state of Erisin. In other words, you've given us some Torah. You've given us some of the secrets you know. You've brought us into some type of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where we're bound to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we're choshed that you are already doing Eishas Ish. You're already in a state of marriage, way beyond what you've given us. You've already revealed for yourself, or had revealed to you, much more intimate details of the Torah. You have a much more intimate knowledge of the Torah, and that you're not passing on to us. You're leaving us in a state of Erisin, a quasi-connected state, where we're bound, but we don't have all, we're not that connected. We don't have all the secrets. You're not giving us over all of your Torah. So, ostensibly, what Korach does, and this is how he gets the 250, we'll see in a moment, is he says, we want Moshe to be a better Mashpia, to give us more. We understand that Machlokas, right, is the destruction of Shlemus. Shalom is when the giver and the taker are completely in unison, trust each other, in harmony, give completely to each other. But we don't trust that Moshe's giving us everything. He's withholding for himself and his siblings higher levels of relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's not passing on to us. Maybe he doesn't think we're worthy of it, or we can handle it, or whatever, but that's not his decision. That's let him give us the full, you know, the full body of Torah. So with that argument, it sounds like what he wants is l'shem shamayim, more connection to Torah, and with that, he totally wins over the 250, because the 250 died, by the way, a separate death than Korach. The 250, what did they want? They lost their position. They could no longer do avodah in the Mishkan, and they craved that ability to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they craved the desire to recapture for themselves that madrega, that opportunity. And he spoke to them. And even when Moshe warned them that they're going to bring Ketores and only one person will survive, they took the risk. Why would they take such a risk? So who does this remind you of? It's the same sin as Nadav and Avihu. It's the same exact sin as Nadav and Avihu. My grandfather brings down here that what drew them is the desire to have one moment, even a moment of complete connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even if it would be at the risk of their souls being consumed. By the way, the pans they used to bring the Ketores were considered holy. They died out of a love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They died in a form of, I guess it's some type of form of Kiddush Hashem. And Moshe understood this. Here, where is this? Moshe understood this. And, hold on. And, he warned them. He warned them that this could be the risk they're taking. Here. But they were on a madrega where they wanted to be moser nefesh for a moment of feeling this connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It was almost like a magnet that they couldn't resist, that they were pulled towards. So that's how Korach spoke to them. And they didn't die by being swallowed up. They died by a fire blazing among them, and etc. That's something everyone will get to in a moment. But what was Korach's real motivation? Did he really want Moshe to give more, to be more of a mashpia? Or is there an impression that he didn't want Moshe's hashpa at all? So here comes something very interesting, and I guess psychological to the depths of human psychology. Kadosh Baruch Hu says here, where the Bezrish brings down, I made zugos in the world. Everything has a zug except what? Except my kavod. Except my kavod has no zug. Now that's important, because any kavod that we feel in our own hearts, any sense of self-respect or self-worth, comes directly from the fact that Hashem's name is also kavod, that Hashem is the essence of kavod. And when we feel that each human being has dignity and self-worth, that comes from the fact that we are creations directly of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tzelem Elokim, and we experience that same sense of kavod, and it doesn't have a zug. It isn't in the relationship of Mashpia and Makabel. First of all, the nefesh of a person, we've spoken about this before, is often referred to as kavod. For example, Lachein samach libi v'yogel kavodi. My heart should rejoice and my kavod should be in a state of, I guess, gila, another form of rejoicing. Ura kavodi. Laman yizamercha kavod. All of these things are referring to the nefesh of a person, which is called kavod. Now, interestingly enough, when a person feels their self-worth, okay, what is that which is the most painful for that person? What detracts the most from the sense of self-worth and dignity? Having to take. Having to be a taker. Having to depend on somebody else. If somebody is, they spent their whole life being independent, self-reliant, and then they get older, and someone has to take care of them, that is so devastating emotionally for so many people that they don't survive the experience. They'd rather just move on. They'd rather just pass on, as opposed to being completely dependent on someone else. Not to be able to give, not to be able to play an important role, not to have something to contribute, to just sit there waiting for as the days pass and not to contribute in some way and have people do things for a person is a tremendous challenge and probably a huge kapara because emotionally it's so painful. Notice that kavod, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, doesn't have a zug. It doesn't work in a mashpia mekabel relationship because the kavod of a person doesn't allow for that person to really be a taker. People can't stand being a taker. And if you find people that are all takers, you could know for sure that there's no sense of self-worth. And the way you can tell that is they're usually miserable and bitter and can't stand everybody around them. And the big joke is, you know, I haven't done anything nice for so-and-so lately. Why are they so angry at me? Like the more you person has, you know, normally has to take, the more they reject it. People who love taking, who are always angry that they've been taken advantage of because they didn't get enough, they're the most bitter people. They're the most, you know, the insides are never settled, never at peace. And it's all very petty and very difficult to deal with, as you all know. A regular, healthy person that has some self-worth rejects the taking. A real kavod is just one-sided, mashpia, giving. There isn't a zug. There is no partner. Hashem said there's zugos for everything. Sun and moon, man and woman, olam hazen, olam haba. Okay, the ruchnius and, you know, the heavens and earth, but for kavod there's no zug. It's one. It's just giving. That's really the essence of a person. And a person feels so good, so fulfilled when they're just a giver. So, now the question is, what did Korach personally in his heart of hearts really want? Korach wasn't really, as he presented himself, saying we want more hashpa from Moshe. We want more, he's withholding from us. Really what Korach was saying is, we don't want anything from Moshe. We want it to come, I want it, Moshe, Korach wants it, to, that he is the giver. That he is the mashpia. That he wants to really replace Moshe, or replace Aaron, or replace the fact that, or he's angry at the fact that he wasn't chosen, that he could have also been a legitimate candidate. By the way, just technically, when Moshe presented Aaron as, this is what he felt. He felt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had told Moshe to pick a Kohen Gadol. So Moshe presented Aaron as a candidate, and it was certainly an acceptable candidate, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu okayed it. But had he picked someone else, he could have also perhaps been acceptable. So it wasn't that Aaron wasn't legitimate, it was just that there could have been another option. Why did he keep it, you know, within him, you know, with his own family? One of the angles. But in any case, the real complication of this is that a person doesn't usually know what's motivating them. A person isn't always aware of what is, you know, going on in their heads in terms of are they really lishma, like he spoke to the 250, or is it really totally not lishma? Now, let's see who Korach was. Korach, as we said, he had Ruach HaKodesh. He was almost on the level of Aaron. He carried the Aaron, which carried the carrier. Okay? Korach was huge. So did he know that he was not Lishma when he presented his argument as entirely L'shem Shamayim? That really was his kavod speaking? What's interesting is Moshe doesn't even necessarily understand Korach. It's very subtle. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu, my grandfather points this out too, and I've said this in the past, but it always bears repeating because it is a fundamental message, and I'm sure my grandfather as a Rav felt this, you know, personally. In Perek Tzayin, in Pasuk Zayin, Moshe told them what they're going to do. They're going to bring Ketores, and Hashem will choose the one person, and then he adds a little gratuitous, almost, you might say in the Pasuk, you know, he says, Rav Lechem B'nei Levi. You know, it's enough already. Don't you think you have enough? Like, B'nei Levi, okay, it's true, you're not the Kohanim, but don't you think you have enough privileges? Now, what were their privileges? They, as we said, they carried the kelim. They were the teachers of Klal Yisrael. They also got gifts from Klal Yisrael. They had special privileges, not as much as the Kohanim, but the Levim, don't forget, they understood that Moshe had given the Avodah Bifnim, in other words, the inside of the Heichal, the menorah, the Shulchan, the Ketores, that was given to the Kohanim. But Moshe here also gave the Avodah Mibachutz, the Karbanos, to the Kohanim. So Levim didn't even have that, the outside work. So Moshe says, but you still have enough. You have a lot of privileges, a lot of status. So because Moshe said this, the Gemara in Sota says, Amar Rav Levi, Barav, Rabbi Levi says, the name of Rav, Bisar Barav Bisruhu. Amar Rabbi Levi. Cut that. Amar Rav Levi. Barav Biser, he used the word Rav to talk to them and to give them, to kind of like deliver the news that they have enough. Ubarav Bisruhu, and in the word Rav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke back to him and gave him Musar. Rav Lechem is what he said to them, and in Parshas Veschanan, Hashem said to Moshe, Rav Lecha, when he was davening to go into Eretz Yisrael. He said, Rav Lecha, you have enough. Look at everything you've done. Isn't that enough? So my grandfather points out here that Moshe davened so much to go into Eretz Yisrael. Why did he want to go into Eretz Yisrael? Well, he struggled with these people for 40 years. He put his life on the line, definitely almost lost his life a number of times. He gave up his family. He gave up his normal life. He gave up everything on behalf of Klal Yisrael. So what did Moshe want in the end of that? Just a little satisfaction to see them settled in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, to put in all that effort, and he did it l'shma. But even for Moshe Rabbeinu, who's anav mikol adam, and everything is l'shem shamayim, you just have a desire to have a little satisfaction, a little gratification, that you can enjoy what you've done. And Hashem said, no, it's enough, rav l'cha. Remember what you said to Korach? You didn't necessarily take into account with total sensitivity where he's coming from, that he didn't even know if he was l'shma. Well, he's punished, so he should have known, and he probably knew in his core. If he's not l'shma, what drove him? What drove him to destroy himself and everyone around him? What drove him sometimes? The covet of a person which hates being a makabel and wants to be a mashpia. Sometimes that the covet of a person resists total l'shma, total just negation of self, where there's nothing in return, where you don't get any recognition. No big day kahuna. None of the gifts that the Kohanim got, none of the privileges of doing Birchas Kohanim, no ability to go inside, no ability to do the Avodah outside, no special status that you go first, you know, like if you're in line in a supermarket and there's a Kohen, put the Kohen first. None of that. Just pure Lishma. Just being Makabel, your position, as a Sar, not as a Sar, but as a Mishares, which by the way comes from the same word, as a servant of the people, to do selflessly, altruistically, to accept all the instructions and that everyone else gives you and tells you what to do, and to carry it out like a good servant without one iota of the kavod, of the gratification, of the position, of being seen as a mashpia. No, none of that. Just total altruism. That's where Korach, sometimes lishma is so difficult for the kavod of a person, because the kavod of a person doesn't work the normal way where there's giving and taking. The covetous person just wants to give. And they were told just to, in a sense, take. This is a form of taking. Taking responsibility, lower status, work, effort, public servant. Do it and don't ask for anything. Don't stand up in front of the Ada in any position where you could be called a mashpia. Nothing. Sometimes that's too much for the covet of a person. So Moshe isn't even sensitive to this and says, it's enough, you have enough, you have all these privileges. You know, what the privileges of service. So Moshe Rabbeinu too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, okay, enough. You want actual satisfaction for your work? You don't need that. All lishma. So what you're really dealing with here is the complexity of the covet of a human being. But the problem is that because Korach, who was so worthy before his fall, so capable, could have taken or felt that he could equally play the role that Aaron would play, and was asked to negate everything, to take his kavod, which wants to be a mashpia, and be only a makabel, and submit really, and completely subsume his own interests, was too much for him, but the danger of this was, he almost brought down Moshe's entire authority. And the fact that we're learning Torah here today is only because Moshe's authority is intact. And that every single chiddush that anybody makes up today is because we have a chain of Mesorah straight back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Make no mistake about it. Everything we learn here goes straight back to Moshe. Moshe kibbol Torah Misinai Masral Yeshua. There's a mashpia makabel relationship, a nosin and a makabel, giving and taking. Moshe gave everything that he was supposed to give. We took it, we give it to the next generation, they take it, they're machadish, they add their own, of course, that's the form of giving, give it to the next generation, and we are directly in that chain. And Korach's sense of self, or inability, because he was so great, almost posed the risk of destroying Moshe's authority. That was the great danger of it. His sin is understandable to all human beings, where he's coming from. The difficulty of his challenge, of his being completely the Shem Shemayim, he was expected to be as Anav Mikol Adam as Moshe himself. And Moshe achieved it, but Korach couldn't take it. It was too much for Korach, and that's why Rashi says, Vayikach Lakachas Atzmo. He took his sense of self. He couldn't just completely subordinate it. Moshe was able to. Korach had too much difficulty with it. And the risk was, as we said, to bring down Moshe's authority. So what Moshe does here, asking for something brand new, is not to form a form of punishment that to show, to really take revenge on Korach. The point, what Moshe had to establish here, is something different. It's the validity, the legitimacy of his position, that every single thing he conveyed to Klal Yisrael was Al Pi Hashem, even the choice of Aaron, and nothing was his own. And to ensure that Klal Yisrael, after this point, wouldn't come up with Moshe, with the argument is, we don't need you, we know it as well ourselves, or whatever the argument is, they do need Moshe. Moshe is the other half that makes Shalom, that makes Shlemus. Moshe is the other half, he's the giver. Now, Dasan Aviron. It's very strange. Moshe didn't even like deal with them. They were talking about, you never took us to Eretz Yisrael, and you want to kill us all in the desert. I mean, this is completely different. They hated Moshe and Aaron from the time of Mitzrayim already. So Moshe does what? He actually goes over to them, okay? He goes over to them, and he tries to kind of calm them down, and to convince them to drop the machlokas. So here, Pasuk Yud Beis, V'yishlach Moshe l'kor l'dasan v'aviron. He went and he called them, and he said, we're not coming. We're not even coming to talk to you. You took us out of a land of Zvas Chalav Adavash, which is, some say, a reference to Mitzrayim, and some say it's a reference to Eretz Yisrael, which would be a real insult. Some say it's a reference to Eretz Yisrael, that you're not bringing us there, which means you're holding us here in the desert because you really can't get us to there, so you've kind of removed us from that land. And you think you should be our leader, but you can't even bring us into Eretz Vaschal of the Devash, and you think you're fooling everyone. And Hashem said, don't even take their portion of the mincha, don't take anything. The mincha is the joint carbon that comes from everybody, nothing to do with the 250 and their ketores. When I offer the regular carbon, don't even let that part that belongs to them not be consumed. The carbon on behalf of Klal Yisrael. I never took a thing from them. I never was indebted to them. And he asked the Kodesh Baruch Hu to, to cut them out of Klai Yisrael completely. But my grandfather points out here that he goes and he calls them. What was the point of calling Dasan Vaviran? He's trying to talk to them, to enlist, to break them off the machlokas. They had nothing to do with this. So we learn from here, from Pirkei Avos, that there are two types of machlokot, right? Some that are l'shem shamayim, and some that are not l'shem shamayim. How can you tell the difference? So the one that's l'shem shamayim is who? Hillel and Shammai. The one that's not l'shem shamayim? What does it say? Right, so the one that it's referring to here, that's Korach of Chol Adato. So here, they call Korach and everybody that joined up with him. So my grandfather points out here that that not just Dasan Ve'aviron, but even when he spoke to the 250 and he tried to encourage them not to go ahead with what they were doing, he was trying to eliminate it. He said, why is this not, why would Moshe want these machlokas to kind of go away and not show, not actually take the opportunity to demonstrate through the machlokas who's right and who's wrong? So we know that a machlokas that's not l'shem shamayim has no kiyum. It has no real leg to stand on, and it should not be pursued. The question is, why isn't this machlokas considered l'shem shamayim? The machlokas with Dasan Vaviran, the machlokas with the 250, even the machlokas with Korach, you could say he was trying to talk to them, Rav Lechem, it's enough. Why doesn't he take the opportunity to demonstrate the truth? So my grandfather says here, and this is the same concept as Shalom and Shalim, but he doesn't say it like that, but it's the same idea. He says, you know how to define a machlokas l'shem shamayim? There's one ingredient that determines if it is or not. In a machlokas l'shem shamayim, both sides have to be of the same opinion that the other side is l'shem shamayim. Both sides have to believe that the other side is l'shem shamayim. In other words, as long as two sides of a machlokas really believe that the other side is trying to do what's right and not self-motivated, and it's not about their ego, and it's not about their stubbornness and their issues and their agendas, but their mom is trying to find out what is the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu here? What is the right derech here? But they just disagree what the right derech is. They're working together. There's a shleimus between the giver and the taker. One is giving, one is taking, the other one's giving, the other one's taking, but each one is taking from the other person. They're hearing, they're listening, they're trying to understand. Then they're giving their opinion, the other person is listening. That's a machlokas, that's l'shem shemayim, and guess what it leads to? Shalom. So Chazal say, the Gemara says that Hillel and Shammai, their students married each other. It leads to shalom. Trust. But a machlokas that each side doesn't trust the other side and isn't taking what the other one wants to give and isn't hearing is not l'shem shamayim, so that you're not allowed to even pursue it because it leads to nothing. So Moshe attempted, certainly with Dasan Vaviran, who hated him so much, and the others, to talk them out of it. Now the 250 were l'shem shamayim in their minds and in their hearts, so they were caught up with Korach. This is the danger of also knowing one's motivations and who they're following. Korach himself was not l'shem shamayim, though he pretended that he was, he probably thought he was. Dasan Vaviran for sure were not l'shem shamayim. How does the parsha end? The parsha ends with the halacha that you have to give gifts. You have to give gifts to the Kohanim and to the Levim. Right after Parshas Korach, V'davar Shem al Aaron, Ani hinei nesati l'ches mishmeres trumosai l'chol kodshei b'nei Yisrael, etc. Rashi, lama nismecha parsha zu, l'kan, why is this parsha near here? L'fi shebak Korach, Korach came and he initiated this distrust against Aaron and the kahuna, so the Torah comes and gives them 24 matnas kahuna. They have to bring Dagoncha, V'siroshcha, V'yitzarecha, and Bikurim, and Trum, and Meiser, and all kinds of gifts that the Kohanim got and the Levim got. And not only that, but when you learn about the Matanas for the Kohanim and the Levim, the Levim had to also give the Kohanim. We give the Kohanim, the Levim give the Kohanim. That's directly after Korach. And this is a tikkun on the pagam of Korach. So the Nesiv HaShalom brings down from the Rajin HaRav, that that giving and taking creates a kesher between the two parties. Doesn't matter who's the giver and who's the taker, it creates a kesher. It creates a shlemus. That's an aspect of shalom. So right after the whole story of Korach, we have the mitzvahs of Klal Yisrael giving to the Levim, Klal Yisrael giving to the Kohanim, Levim giving to the Kohanim, and that, he says, comes to kind of fill the gap, and they give Meiser Min HaMeiser, it's called, Meiser from the Matzah, Meiser, because this creates a kesher. The giving, so the whole world is set up on giving and taking. But Moshe Shapiro says, brings down, I just want to read one chazal here, just so we understand the complexity of it. In all this giving and taking, okay, just to take it on a little bit of a more philosophical and transcendent level, the Gemara says in Brachos that a pit cannot be filled with its own soil. There is no soil in the pit to fill the pit anymore. The soil's been carted away. The whole world is created in a way where there's giving and taking, where there's a void that has to be filled. The problem with this world is that, in the end, the pit, which represents this world, cannot be filled with its own soil. If you take it to the next level, philosophically, there is not enough. There is what we need to completely fill the emptiness, the void that is the natural condition of this world. In other words, the void of ruchnius can't come from this world. It doesn't exist in this world. It comes from another place. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave it to us through the Torah. By the way, through Shabbat Shalom through the Torah, which is Chol Nasiv Oseha Shalom, through Shabbos. And through the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's also called Shalom, the whole Shlomo is called HaMelech Shehashalom Shalo in Shir HaShirim, right? HaMelech Shehashalom Shalo. The king, that peace is his. Now, so we have the following is considered Shalom. We have the Torah, we have Shabbos, and the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which means to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us three gifts which come from another sphere, which are the only things that will give us what we need, that we have to take to fill the void. And they don't come, they don't emanate and originate from here. A person has to make themselves open to the gifts and let those gifts fill them, which means a person has to make themselves a makabel. Now, it's very easy to make oneself a makabel. For example, if a person knows they don't know math, so they go to a teacher who knows math, and the more the teacher gives, the better it is, and the person openly says, I don't know anything, I want to receive everything, I want someone who can give me as much as possible. So in things that don't touch our kavod, we're very happy to take, and to make ourselves takers, and to make ourselves receivers, really, and to want to receive everything the giver can give. But as soon as it comes in, touches our kavod, our sense of worth, or our sense of knowing what's right or wrong without somebody telling us, making our own decisions, you know, assessing things through our own perspective, whenever it comes into that, any anochi aspect, all of a sudden, no one wants to be makabel. No one wants to be makabel, and we resist any, you know, contribution from this area in terms of morality or ethics or guidance or, I mean, until we're conditioned to receive this. But the natural reaction is, not to, but we have to know what the Gemara says here, that there is nothing. What we have here can't fill. We don't have the wherewithal. We don't have what we need to fill the hole that exists. It can only come from receiving it from the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us, and the teachers of Torah, and the role models that are just not role models, in terms of learning, but in terms of behavior. And what it really is asking for is the opposite, is what Moshe perfected, and really this was, Korach and Moshe were opposite extremes, anivus, you know, which is humility, as opposed to a sense which is so normal to us of, you know, that we'll make our own mistake. But what I guess the Chumash is teaching us here is that what's in jeopardy when a person wants to promote themselves is what's in jeopardy is ability to be Makabel Torah, and pass it on to the next generation. All right. Everybody have a wonderful week. Oh, I have to make two announcements.